to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington, working on this program via remote. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Tuesday, May 3rd, 2022. The U.S. Embassy in South Sudan says press freedom is essential for the implementation of the 2018 peace agreement.
These conversations can't happen without press freedom. They can't happen in a meaningful way unless people are able to hear from all sides of the debate.
And the chairperson of the Union of Journalists in South Sudan says press freedom is under threats in the country.
Freedom of the press helps to promote other basic human rights. You know, like if I am free to talk, then tomorrow if you are arrested, I am able to say, yes, my brother has been arrested because of ABCD and we need him out, or we need a court process or something like that.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. On this World Press Freedom Day, the U.S. Embassy in South Sudan says press freedom is essential during the implementation of the revitalized peace agreement. The Charge d'Affaires at the U.S. Embassy in Juba is calling on South Sudanese leaders to support South Sudan's media houses facing censorship, intimidation, and suspension of independent radio stations. Dengai Deng has the story for VOA from Bor.
In a statement commemorating World Press Freedom Day, the U.S. Embassy Charge d'Affaires in Juba, David Wren, says the day offers a valuable opportunity to reflect on the importance of press freedom in South Sudan. Wren says at a time when the truth is increasingly under attack, the need for accurate, fact-based reporting and accountability has never been greater.
South Sudan has a lot of work to do to establish and solidify the institutions that are critical to a well-functioning democratic state. There's a bill pending with the legislature now to set up the constitution-making process so that South Sudanese can have a conversation about what their permanent constitution should look like, about how power, responsibility, authority, and resources should be distributed between the center and the regions. These conversations can't happen without press freedom. They can't happen in a meaningful way unless people are able to hear from all sides of the debate.
Wren says the United States is very concerned about press freedom in South Sudan.
We've seen some of the local radio stations shut down over very trivial matters. And we also are aware that journalists, not just radio and television, print, even social media, self-censor. And they self-censor because of the actions that the government has taken both at the national and local level to penalize journalists who say things that the government would prefer that they not say. That is antithetical to press freedoms. It's antithetical to a functioning democratic society.
Wren says he has raised the issue with President Salva Kiir, asking him to ensure civic space for South Sudanese to enjoy the freedoms enshrined in South Sudan's constitution. He called on all sectors of society to support the South Sudanese media outlets in their struggles against censorship and unlawful arrest of journalists.
Press freedom matters because information is power. People want to control information for their own purposes. A free press is the protection against that. A free press ensures that when we as citizens, whether South Sudanese, American, European, other Africans, whoever, that we make decisions based on the facts and all of the information and the arguments that people make for or against a particular policy. If we don't have that, we'll make bad decisions.
World Press Freedom Day was proclaimed by the UN General Assembly in 1993, following a recommendation adopted at the 26th session of UNESCO's General Conference in 1991. It was carried out in direct response to a call by African journalists who produced the landmark Windhoek Declaration on Media Pluralism and Independence in 1991. Since South Sudan's independence in July 2011, freedom of expression has been severely restricted. According to the UN Commission on Human Rights, South Sudan is one of the most dangerous places in the world to be a journalist. In February last year, Amnesty International released a report accusing South Sudan National Security Service of using abusive surveillance to terrorize journalists, activists, and government critics. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Bor.
This year's World Press Freedom Day theme is Journalism Under Digital Siege. Some South Sudanese journalists say the country's press is still not free. The chairperson of the Union of Journalists in South Sudan says government institutions need to be sensitized on the importance of press freedom. Manyang David Mayar reports for VOA from Juba.
At the garnished printing press in Juba, separate webs of newspaper sheets come together and are cut, folded, and cut again. At the far end of the printing shop, full-color copies roll off the press, ready to be distributed in Juba and across the country. On several occasions, newspaper owners have complained that government agencies who are stationed at printing offices in Juba removed articles they deem critical or unflattering of government policy and actions. Anna Numeriano, editor-in-chief of the Juba Monitor English Daily, says between January and March of this year, security personnel removed dozens of articles from her newspaper.
They remove the stories and the space remain blank like that. So they say why we are not to listen to them. So on 17th of March, they suspend the newspaper. So Juba Monitor did not come out on 17th because of why the story is removed and the space is left blank. That was the reason. So at the end, they summoned me. And it continues that week, that very week, it continues like 3 times they're removing the story.
Namriano says government agents force newspaper owners to fill up the spaces where stories have been removed to help the government cover up their censorship. Irene Ayah of the Association for Media Development in South Sudan says press censorship in the country goes beyond just removal of stories.
Last month, we registered about 4 articles removed from newspaper. That is just in 1 month. So in other months also, there were articles removed. So this actually indicates that there is still censorship, especially in the newspaper. And then we still also have some few harassment of journalists. In the month of February, there were some journalists that were arrested in parliament and they were detained.
Namriano says when her paper covered the arrest of journalists at parliament, the article was removed at the printing press by the security personnel. On this World Press Freedom Day, Namriano says the press in South Sudan is still not free.
We don't have freedom of expression in the country because I don't know if it is in other countries that security are removing the story at the printing company. The solution is let us do our work as media houses. And if there's anything we can see, we have the code of conduct, we have media law to guide us. And it is really not total. Sometimes the stories we remove is really very bad.
Information Minister Michael McQuay insists there is fresh freedom in South Sudan.
South Sudan is the only place where journalists are free, where they enjoy absolute freedom according to the law. I say according to the law because there is nothing absolute in this world. There is freedom of law, freedom of expression, freedom of press, freedom of journalism according to the law, so that they are controlled, so that they don't go astray.
In 2021, Reporters Without Borders ranked South Sudan 139 out of 180 in its World Press Freedom Index. Patrick Oyet, chairman for the Union of Journalists in South Sudan, says government's institutions need to be sensitized on the importance of a free press in a country.
Freedom of the press helps to promote other basic human rights. You know, like if I am free to talk, then tomorrow, if you are arrested, I am able to say, yes, my brother has been arrested because of ABCD and we need him out or we need a court process or something like that. If I see my neighbor has been shot dead, I am able to talk. I'm able to inform people about what has happened and justice therefore will come.
Oyet says freedom of the press is fundamental for the promotion of other basic human rights stipulated in the Constitution. Without a free press, he says, fundamental human rights will be ignored and the future of that country is doomed. Since 2011, 6 journalists have been killed in South Sudan. South Sudan is ranked 128 out of 180 in the 2022 Reporters Without Borders Press Freedom Index, with the worst countries at the bottom of the list. It was ranked 139 in the 2021 Press Freedom Index. For VOA News, Amanyang David Mayar in Juba.
Some journalists in the Sudanese capital Khartoum are expressing concern over declining state of press freedom after the 2021 military takeover. Some journalists say harassment, threats, and economic hardship have forced many journalists to take up other professions. Michael Atit has this report for VOA from Khartoum.
Sudanese journalists here say press freedoms have been deteriorating since the October coup led by Army General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan. The cases of threats, harassment, and intimidation of journalists have increased significantly during the past 6 months, which makes them worry about the future of journalism in Sudan. Shawgi Abdul Azim, editor-in-chief of the online investigative media outlet Istiqsa, says over the past 6 months, his reporters have documented dozens of attacks on media houses and journalists in Sudan, especially during mass protests against the military coup. Abdul Azim says he experienced a direct threat to his life in November last year. He says he was warned not to speak to any international media.
I was hosted live on Al Jazeera, and after leaving their office, 8 armed security men followed me on a pickup. They surrounded my car, picked me up, blindfolded me, and moved with me for more than 2 hours. They took me to the National Security Office, interrogated me, and made me write a statement not to criticize the military again.
In late December last year, Sudanese security forces stormed the offices of Al Arabiya, Al Hadaz, and Al Sharq TV channels and assaulted the staff, including reporters, destroyed broadcasting equipment, and fired tear gas inside the office. On the same day, security forces detained Al-Sharq correspondents Mahal Tilib and Saleh Osman 4 hours before releasing them. Neither journalist was charged with an offense. Abdulazim says covering ongoing pro-democracy protests has become dangerous for journalists in Sudan.
Many newspapers, TV channels, or radio stations receive directives not to host or conduct interviews with some named individuals who are critics of the military leaders. There are intelligence officers who are assigned to monitor this operation.
In early January, authorities confiscated the broadcast license of Al Jazeera Live and closed their office in Al Khartoum. Aisha Assamani, an executive member of the Sudanese Media Network, has recorded more than 10 direct attacks on journalists and media houses since the October 25th military coup. Assamani says such attacks violate freedom of speech and hinder the democratic transformation and development of the country. Assamani says they are targeting freedom of speech with so much excessive force. Majority of our journalists are now fearing and their lives are in danger. She says most of them remain anonymous due to the dangers of the situation. Muhammad Abadi, who works at Al Sudani Arabic newspaper in Khartoum, says the country's deteriorating economy also impacts the media. He says he knows many journalists who left the profession and are looking for other ways to make a living due to the threats and intimidation they face on the job.
Most of them are not using social media platforms such as YouTube and other online platforms because they earn something better. I am afraid that in 1 or 2 years, many might abandon this profession altogether.
In February this year, Sudanese authorities arrested a group of journalists belonging to the BBC in Khartoum and held them at police station for investigation before releasing them after a few hours. Repeated calls to Brigadier General Al-Tahir Abu Haja, the press advisor in the office of military leader Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, for comment on this story went unanswered. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, journalists in Cameroon call on government and rebels to stop abusing journalists. Find out why after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how can you change or maintain your country's reputation?
First of all, change the positions of the police officers and even in the army, because it's not well organized. There's a lot of corruption in it.
I would like to encourage the people around the country to maintain the good behaviors in the country. And when it is bad, maybe I would encourage them to copy from other countries which are doing good outside.
Unity anyway, unity. Cooperation. Cooperation among the nationals. It can promote our country.
In talking about the peace in this country, it would make people be more interested.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. And in our Tuesday Health segment, we take a look at cases of hepatitis. Health officials are still trying to identify the cause of cases of acute and severe hepatitis that have infected scores of children in 16 countries, mainly in Europe. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Over 170 cases of acute severe hepatitis in children aged between 1 month and 16 years have been reported from 16 countries, 12 in Europe. Most cases have been found in Britain. Other infections have been reported from the United States, Canada, Israel, and Japan. The World Health Organization reports 17 children have required liver transplantation and one child has died. Hepatitis in children sometimes can lead to chronic liver disease and liver failure. Philippa Easterbrook is a scientist at the WHO's Program of Global HIV, Hepatitis, and Sexually Transmitted Infections. She says the origin of these infections in children remains unknown. She says investigations have shown that none of the children have the common viral causes of hepatitis A, B, C, or E.
The questionnaires have not identified any common exposure, be it to a toxin or a particular food, and no strong travel history. And importantly, very few of the children have received COVID vaccination, so there does not appear to be a link with COVID vaccine.
Easterbrook says one line of inquiry is to see whether there is a possible link to adenovirus. This is a common infection in children, which can cause respiratory illness, gastroenteritis, conjunctivitis, and bladder infection. She says a few cases of unexplained hepatitis in children occur every year in most countries. She says scientists are trying to ascertain whether the current apparent infection rate is truly unusually high or just a result of better reporting.
The suggestions are there is a clear significant increase above that background rate in several of the countries that have been able to report this data with some confidence. But that is what is we're trying to establish in the various countries now that we're working with to investigate their cases and establish whether this is the case.
The WHO says toxicology, immunology, and other studies will continue in hospitals. It notes the likelihood that more cases will be detected before the cause of this infection can be confirmed and before more control and prevention measures can be taken. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The 2021 World Press Freedom Index compiled by Reporters Without Borders shows that journalism is completely or partially blocked in 73% of the 180 countries ranked by the organization. There has been no significant change in the Middle East and North Africa, which maintain last place in the regional rankings.
I would say that the political aspect is obviously clear, which is the fact that there are authoritarian regimes which are pretty much, you know, having a very tight fist in terms of the margin of freedom of expression and freedom of the press, which is allowed in the different respective countries in the MENA region or the Middle East and North Africa region. That means that, you know, you're not allowed to really express your views openly. And if you do, you can always face very dire and very negative consequences, such as being arrested, detained, you know, in some cases killed. So that makes, of course, the risk or the high price of, you know, speaking up very intimidating for many people. So when I wrote my second book, Egyptian Revolution 2.0, myself and my co-author were talking about political bloggers who paved the way for the Arab Spring in general and the Egyptian Revolution in particular. If you look at many of these young bloggers, many of them are not really effective or active anymore in the realm of political opposition, because obviously they're scared of the tightening and shrinking margin of freedom which is allowed for them. Some of them have stopped their own writing or blogging altogether. Some of them are writing or blogging about social issues, but not political issues. And some of them are just exercising their own resistance or opposition from the diaspora, from self-exile, because of fear of certain consequences.
With so many restrictions on the traditional and social media in the region, what is the way out and how could Arab people enjoy press freedom like normal nations?
I mean, really, it's all interrelated and intertwined. I mean, there is the political aspect, the economic aspect, there's the social aspect, there's also the legal aspect. And there are certain aspects also related to bureaucracy and related to lack of proper education and media training and media literacy. The level even of education and training when it comes to journalists and people who are working in the field of journalism is still very low and still very marginal in terms of the number of people who have been officially or professionally trained in the field of journalism and taking on a journalistic career. So all of these factors really kind of inhibit the margin of freedom and the margin of professionalism, I should say, in Arab media. The best way is to start from the bottom up, to start from improving the level of training and the level of education for journalists in the region. And of course, there is always the issue of the political restrictions and the dictatorships, which are pretty much, you know, as we said before, constraining and limiting the amount of freedom. So I think that the other alternative, obviously, is social media and new media, which is why a lot of people are using the social media and new media for the purpose of expression of their own opinions.
Are there any examples of where press freedom, whether it's traditional or social media, has yielded very good results, like helping to clean up corruption, abuse of power, good governance, or democracy?
The clearest example, of course, is the political bloggers who paved the way for the Arab Spring in 2011 and for the Egyptian Revolution in 2011. They really created what we can describe as a spillover effect, meaning by breaking the taboo in the realm of politics, by talking about issues such as corruption and violations of human rights and governmental abuses, they were breaking certain taboos and therefore compelling the mainstream media to talk about these sensitive issues. Even in the social domain, I would say by breaking taboos around issues such as sexual harassment and domestic violence and others, they were also breaking social taboos and compelling the mainstream media to talk about these particular sensitive issues. If you want to talk about more recent examples, I can give examples from Tunisia and examples from Sudan. In these two particular countries, there has been a very strong movement among journalists and those who are working in the field of media to resist autocracy and to resist dictatorship and to try to really widen the margin of press freedom in these two countries in particular, using different forms of expression online and offline, which I think is the best formula or the best possible combination in order to achieve some tangible and important results.
Still on media issues, journalists in Cameroon are marking the World Press Freedom Day with calls for government troops and rebels to stop abusing reporters covering the separatist conflict. Cameroonian media groups say at least 8 journalists have fled from the country's troubled western regions because of threats to their lives. Moki Edwin Kinzika reports from Yaoundé.
36-year-old Lambert Kevin is a baker in Cameroon's capital, Yaoundé. But 2 years ago, he was a reporter in Cameroon's northwest region for Canal 2 International, one of the country's top TV stations, reporting on the separatist conflict. Kevin says he decided to leave the area and his career after covering an attack on a village that left scores of people dead and homes burned. but it wasn't reporting on the brutality or violence that pushed him to flee. Kevin says he was ordered by both the Anglophone rebels and government troops to report lies.
After intimidation, at gunpoint, the fighters instructed me to report that the houses were burned by the military. When I finally got to the seat where the houses were burnt, the military equally ordered me. They ordered me to report that the houses were touched by the separatists.
Kevin says both the separatists and government troops demanded to read his report before publication and threatened to kill him if he said anything negative about them. Both Cameroon's military and rebel fighters deny threatening or abusing journalists. But Cameroon's Union of Journalists says since the conflict began in 2017, separatists have abducted 16 journalists and 4 of them died in their custody. Cameroon authorities blame separatists for attacks on 12 community radio stations in the western regions and forcing 8 newspapers to close. Meanwhile, the Cameroon Association of English-Speaking Journalists, CAMASEJ, says government troops are holding 9 journalists that were reporting in the regions. CAMASEJ says at least 80 journalists have fled the western regions, most to the cities of Douala, Yaoundé and Bafoussam. Nga Christian Bibgo is publisher of Cameroon's lone English daily newspaper, The Garden Post, and president of the Cameroon Association of English Language Publishers. He says his association assists journalists who flee threats from troops and the rebels, also known as Ambazonian or Amber fighters.
The first thing you have to do is talk to them and build them up psychologically, make them see the importance of regaining self-confidence and healing their minds. And sometimes we've gone to the extent of giving them health assistance for those of them who maybe suffered one or two attacks by either the military or Amber fighters. And then we offered some of them office space at the Guardian Post. They have access to internet.
The Committee to Protect Journalists in February joined 26 groups in calling on Cameroon's President Paul Biya to release all people detained for free expression, including 4 journalists. Thomas Awajinu, Mancho Bibixi, T. Conrad, and Kingsley Fomonyonjoka were arrested between 2016 and 2020 and are being held at Yaoundé's Kondengi Central Prison. The 4 journalists were charged with terrorism and collaborating with separatists, charges they deny. Despite the arrest, Communication Minister René Emmanuel Sadi claims the media is free in Cameroon, but warns journalists against what he calls attempts to destroy the country's image.
Media men and women in Cameroon carry out their daily work in total freedom and independence. However, incitement to violence and hostility against the homeland is not tolerable in a rule of law and in a society of freedom and responsibility.
The Cameroon Association of English-Speaking Journalists on World Press Freedom Day called on both rebel fighters and government troops to stop attacking journalists. The separatists have been fighting since 2017 to carve out an independent English-speaking state in Cameroon's northwest and southwest regions. Cameroon's English speakers complain of second-class treatment by the country's French-speaking majority. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
That's all we prepared for you this Tuesday. We now end this show with Salif Keita and the song Tele. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for taking time to be with us this evening. Remember to join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.